Hear now the words of the witches, the secrets we hid in the night, when dark was our destiny's pathway, that now we bring forth into light.
Merry meet and welcome to episode 3 of The Abysmal Witch, a subsidiary of Pennies in the Well. I am your host, Saturn Darkhope, and today is November 10th, 2010. Yes, it's the day before Remembrance Day, and today's topic is all about past connections. I'm going to do something a little different this episode. First, I'm going to have some abysmal musings on the topic of past connections. And then we're going to have a little break and then go into the actual ritual part of it. So if you aren't inclined to listen to me ramble in true rambling style, feel free to skip ahead. There will be, like I said, a music break. There will also be a minute of silence in honor of Remembrance Day, which is tomorrow in Canada. And then I'll go into the ritual itself. So you can always fast forward if you like. On to the show. So, as I said, I'm going to do some musings on the topic first. And what got all this sparked, and I'll give you a little background on the ritual that's going to happen as well, because it all goes together. So the ritual that I'm going to do a little later on is about closure on an old relationship in a healthy way, which is a little weird to say. It was a friendship, not romantic, I should clarify. And there were things done at the time to bring closure to the actual relationship. But what I'm finding is that in my memories of this person, I still react in the negative way, in the way that existed at the end, with all of the frustration and anger that went with it. I don't remember the good times, right? I don't remember the happiness that happened without it getting flooded and overwhelmed with the negative memories pretty much right afterwards. So I'm going to do a little work on trying to release some of that later today. And then that, obviously, it's a past connection. It's a personal connection from my past. Ties into, for me, Remembrance Day. This got me thinking, because Remembrance Day in Canada is, I guess, our equivalent of Veterans Day in the States, and I don't know about any other countries and what they do for their veterans, but it is a day where we honor those who have fought for us in war. That's my quick, easy summation. I have two major disclaimers for this show. Disclaimer number one, remember, I've said this before, I am not a student of history. Not, definitely not a student of history. So when it comes to details of the past, I am not your girl. And if you want accuracy and certainty, go to somebody else. Go look it up online. I haven't spent a lot of time researching this episode, and I'll explain that in a sec. So I don't have a lot of historical things that I'm going to be throwing in. And if I do throw my take on things in, well, that's just it. It's my take on it, which is major disclaimer number two. This isn't stuff that I've spent a lot of time thinking about. This is just things that have come up in the last couple of days while I was thinking about this ritual and then started thinking about Remembrance Day and seeing some of the things people are talking about online and stuff. And it made me kind of think about putting some of those concepts together of current, well, not current relationships, but personal relationships, country relationships, connections that we have with our ancestors, because it's been all about Samhain for the last month, and therefore the big ancestor connection. So you've got ancestors remembering our fallen, so to speak, and then my own personal work from an old relationship, and all of that are past connections and of various natures, and it makes me wonder what some of the similarities and dissimilarities are between them. So I'm going to be rambling on about that, or I should say musing. Abysmal musings or abysmal ramblings? So close, so hard to tell the difference. For the first part of this show. And the other thing I wanted to say before I get started into the actual stuff is I'm taking part in NaNoWriMo this month. It's National Novel Writing Month. It's a personal challenge where the people who sign up for it attempt to write 50,000 words in 30 days. And if you do the math, that's 1,667 words per day, every day. And even if you write fast, that's still like an hour to 2 hours of time every day for 30 days. So it's kind of eating into my free time rather strongly. And I'm doing very well, don't get me wrong. I'm loving my story. But it is taking a lot of time where I would normally sneak in a podcast or two. It may not be possible given that particular dedication because I am bound and determined to meet that 50,000 word goal. Damn it! I have a strong competitive streak every now and again. Not often, but when it comes up, oh boy, it's there and you just can't, yeah. Anyhow, so that's what I'm doing for the month of November. I hope to get another show out before the month is over, but as I've always said, I guarantee nothing, and that kind of has to stand. So for the moment, we'll just be happy with doing this Remembrance Day special, the As an Abysmal Witch episode, and go with it from there. Any other news? Normally, I wouldn't do things that have happened in my life on the Abysmal Witch episodes. Obviously, the NaNoWriMo is good to let you know just because of the fact that I'm kind of out of touch for things at the moment. Another thing that happened literally just in the last couple of days, and if you follow me on Twitter, which feel free, abysmal_witch is my Twitter name, I guess, and what you can find me under, and abysmal is one S. Or if you follow me on Facebook, or a friend of me, I should say, on Facebook, at Saturn Dark Hope, you can just search me out and friend me if you like. So if you follow me on there, you already know about this, and if you don't, well, I'm going to say it just because it's affecting my mood today and kind of my perspective on things, talking about past connections again. There was a shooting outside of my building 2 nights ago. A man was shot 5 or 6 times, we presume by someone he knows, but I mean, I have nothing official. I haven't even checked the news after the first day. The really sad and horrible and horrific part, I mean, not that his dying wasn't really sad and horrible, but his 3-year-old son was in the car at the time that he was shot. And that to me is just tragic and brutal. And as it turns out, I am acquainted with the family and have met the child before, a sweet little kid, which, you know, when it becomes personal, it all becomes that much harder. Which is actually, I guess, I'll take that as a starting point into my musings on past connections. With the Remembrance Day coming up, I looked it up, and there are 4 living World War I veterans still in the world. None of them in Canada, as it turns out. I think one's in Australia, one in the States, one in England, and I think there's another one in Poland, but there was some differential that he joined after our armistice, but before the something else. Like I said, not a student of history. These guys are like 109 years old. I think the one in the other category was 110. 109 years old. The oldest verified veteran made it to 115. He died in 2007. How amazing and insane is that? The guy survived World War I, which I think it was something like 60 million people were in the war. Something like that, and just under 10 million people, that number I'm more certain of, I think it was 9,650,000 or something like that, verified, people died in World War I. That's 1/6, 1 out of every 6 person who went into that war died. That's crazy. And we now have these 4 last living people that were actually involved directly in it, alive in the world at 109. Holy crap. My own grandmother made it to 101 and a half. I thought that was nuts. 109. Okay, pulling back from that one. But still, they're our final living connection with that war, and they're about to pass out of the world. I mean, let's face it, they've got a finite number of years left in them, unless some miracle, you know, no one's going to die ever again after 2011. Maybe that's the 2012 apocalypse, is that our mortality is gone and we all live forever, and that creates huge, huge, horrible problems in the world. Anyhow, it's to me, it's interesting that this connection that we have, even though for most of us there is no direct personal connection with those four people, there's still something to be said that the people who are there are still alive in the world today, that there is still this living, direct connection to what happened. And soon, when they go, it'll be pure history. It won't be living anymore. It'll be gone. And I find that intriguing. I mean, what is the difference between living history, you know, where we're still connected to it by those who can tell us stories, and the history that has slipped only into books and notebooks and journals? It intrigues me. There, and this is kind of what the musing section is all about, just interesting thoughts that I was having. Feel free to email me, by the way, penniesinthewell@gmail.com, or leave a comment on the group site on Facebook. Yes, there is a group on Facebook. It's Pennies in the Well, separate words. And it's just a group. It's so you can't like me. You can only join me. Wow, that came out a lot more psychotic and freaky sounding than I intended it to. Did I mention dead body on driveway a few days ago? Very, very weird couple of days. My apartment happens to overlook the front walkway, so I walked out on my balcony and looked down and saw the yellow tarp-covered body and all the cops out there. I went, wow, I know I was working really hard, but I had no idea my head was that far in the sand. I'd heard the pops, but it's been fireworks city around here a week before Halloween, so a little dismissive. Who knew? Clearly not I. Anyhow, coming back to past connections, and so something else I kind of want to touch on when it comes to the war thing. It's just a little thought to throw out there, because thinking about World War One and what it would have been like is, I think, a really good exercise, actually, to not just think of it as, oh yeah, that happened, but what was it like? What would it have been like to live through that? How is that different now? Because it is different now. We would never fight that war in the same way. I mean, they didn't have, and remember, not student of history, this is my best guess, thank you. But their weaponry was not sophisticated. They threw people at the problem. They didn't throw weapons at it. These days, we throw weapons at it. We don't throw people in the same way. There are still, of course, people and soldiers, absolutely, working at the command of their country, but it's different. There's, I think, more awareness, more knowledge, even for the people who sign up into the army. It's impossible in some ways, I think, in the first world countries to not be aware to some degree. There's too much connection. The internet has taken over and made us a global community. It isn't, I very much doubt, this is my guess, but I doubt that it's the same as it used to be, where it was probably easier to do the us-them thing and to feel threatened and encroached upon. And trust me, we still feel that way. You know, you watch how people react to shifting racial balances in neighborhoods, and we're still very much caught up in our biological makeup of protect your own, protect your family. And, you know, you expand that, it's protect your country. But these days, like I said, we're connected in a different way. We see things differently than it would have been back then. But maybe that's all the more reason to think of what it would have been like, to consider maybe what would have driven that situation and what would have driven it now. I also bring it up because I know there can be a lot of contention around the current wars that happen in the world, and I'm not at all qualified to discuss that. I find news exceedingly distressing. So while I'm aware of the broad strokes of what happens, I do not watch the news. I don't typically read the newspaper. I get what can't be avoided. It's amazing, though, because people talk about things so much, you actually don't typically miss the really big things unless you've been, you know, a hermit for the weekend working on something and not paying any attention to Facebook or Twitter or anything like that, because if you're at all socially networked online or dealing with people in real life, you don't avoid the news. It just takes a little bit longer to get to you. Unless you happen to be in the building that gets the police tape put up around it, in which case you're the first person to know. It's kind of weird. Very unusual for me. Sorry, it's going to slip in and out for the day. Like I said, weird headspace. This is also take two of this particular show because GarageBand decided to kill the first recording, so hopefully I will retain my sense-making. Anyhow, with all of these changes and the social networking and how modern-day people view war, I think it affects how we view the people who are fighting for us. And Mojo and Sparrow on the Wiggling Way have talked about this in past episodes a lot. They've done a great justice of, regardless of what the politics are at the highest level, the people who are out fighting are fighting for their country. They are fighting to protect their homes, their family, their people, hopefully and potentially to support a better way of life in all kinds of places. There is, I think, nobility within that, that as people on the sidelines and looking just at the politics, it can be easy for some of us to forget that that aspect is still in there. And instead of painting just the politicians with the brush of tar and feather, it can slide over into the people who are doing the fighting. And I think it would be delusional, in a sense, this is very personal opinion, to think that we no longer need people to protect us. I think that would be foolish. The world is not in such a place where we all get along well, we share our toys well, and the world is, you know, what was it, the happiest elf from the beginning of Lemony Snicket's series of unfortunate events. We are not the happiest elf. The world is not living in that happy, sing-songy, cheerful world where everything gets along and nothing bad ever happens. Bad shit happens. There are bad people who make really nasty and cruel choices. And having people who are willing to step up and protect us from that is huge. I can't describe it any better. I mean, would you be willing to go and pick up a gun and potentially kill other people to protect your home, your family, and your country? I haven't. Now, admittedly, if the zombies came tomorrow, I like to think that I would. But zombies are different because that strips the humanity from them. And we no longer have the luxury of removing the humanity from the people that we're fighting because we know too much now. It's not a couple hundred years ago or 400 years ago or, you know, the time of the Crusades where it was the infidels and because of what they believed, well, clearly we were superior, they were inferior, and we had to rescue them from their own belief system. That's not the case anymore. I mean, there is still some of that fundamentalist religious zealotry that goes on. I'm not trying to hide or avoid any of that. But I tend to think that on average, we have a greater understanding of the people on the other side. Wow. Okay. I didn't mean to digress that far into the war part itself. Just those were some of the thoughts that I was having on that. Pulling it back to past connections, though, Remembrance Day is one of the few events for me where the country co-creates, it's my theme for this year, I swear, co-creation of events, but we co-create an awareness of our past and our connection to it. And how fucking cool is that? You know, if you think about it in a certain way, when there are these national holidays and people actively embrace them and get involved, and not just in a, you know, putting up the decorations and saying the things that they're supposed to say and doing the things that they're supposed to say or do, but to actively engage emotionally in it, which I think a large number of people in Canada do when it comes to Remembrance Day. When you engage emotionally in it, that's when you're co-creating the event. And I think that there was concerns a couple of years ago that it was, as we had lost the last of our World War I veterans, as we're losing our World War II veterans, that those connections were slipping away and that people who had been more supportive of the Poppy, what I'll call the Poppy Project, so we'd give donations to get a poppy to wear for Remembrance Day, and I believe the money goes to support the veterans, that the money they were taking in was falling, and the presence certainly in the world, in Canada locally, seemed less to me, but that it's growing now. This year I've noticed more people around, more actively selling the poppies, and it's younger people. So it's been passed over, because we no longer have the older veterans, to the young people who are taking up that role, which is great to have that understanding. There was a person on Facebook who was a teacher and was talking about how one of her students, or a couple of her students there in high school, were dissing or otherwise disrespecting soldiers that had come for Remembrance Day, whatever the heck, it's not a rally, you know. They came for, it's not a workshop, that word, whatever that word is, you know the word I'm talking about, assembly. So there we go, at school. And it sparked a discussion, interestingly, mostly I think among parents, of how to get the importance of Remembrance Day into the youth these days, who are spending their time playing video games and pretending to be soldiers but not understanding or respecting the live soldiers and what it really means. And there were some cruel type suggestions on how to make the kids aware of how stark and harsh that reality can be, and how insulated they are from the negatives of the world, even such as poverty. I liked instead, one woman had said that her own child had been a tad problematic, and so they took him home and had a discussion for like 2 hours or something about what it meant, and then they watched Schindler's List. And I thought, you know, that's not what happens for enough people these days, but it's the perfect way to deal with it, to actually teach directly and emotionally what it means. And it also indicates to me how these past connections are slipping away. If we don't make the effort to hold onto our past, it'll just be something in a book. And the living quality of it, the emotional quality, is what brings it to life and makes it so very strong. And it's interesting to me, because it's not just the Remembrance Day in the war, like I said, and I have this very personal thing I'm going to be working on in the ritual section for releasing own personal past connections. But you'll notice that when I talked about it, it's not about of getting rid of the whole thing. It's about getting a healthy perspective on it, which comes generally with time, but I kind of want to hurry that up. But there's a lot of past connections that happen. The war, the Remembrance Day, that's very much on the countryside, and it gives a unity to us as a people living in a country, good or bad, to the people that go out and act on our behalf. And it connects us with our past to do these type of remembering events, which I think is very important. As I mentioned, we've been talking ancestors for like at least a good month now because of Samhain. But we tend to think of ancestors as those of our bloodline, or if you're adopted, those of your adopted line, or potentially both your adopted line and your bloodline. There's also the spiritual ancestors who come to us, obviously through the spirituality that we practice. We have ancestors who led the way, so to speak, in those areas, and that we can connect with. Those are also connections with the past, and I've noticed personally what I've seen within paganism, a stronger influence in recent years to incorporate ancestry and ancestor worship into pagan practice, in a variety of different traditions, which I think is great and fabulous, but it's something we have to actively do, right? It's not something that just happens. So how do we keep our own past alive to us? I mean, through the work with the ancestors is one thing. I think remembering the important events in our history is another way, and maybe even just connecting with our country, there's something to be said for that, which is interesting. Like I said, these are musings. I don't have answers. I'm contemplating the world and taking you along for the ride. I'm going to stop there and just let you think about your own connections, your personal history, because we all have personal history. I mean, conflict happens, right? And that conflict gives us unpleasant, often, or sometimes really like, yay, way to go me, moments in our past. And they happen from our country's perspective, from our religious perspective, from our personal perspective. But these past connections shape us as to who we are now. And as such, no matter how much they're released, they should never be forgotten, in my personal opinion. Because we gain strength from those connections. And I think if we really work with them and allow them their proper place within our world, we can be broader in our horizons. The farther we can see, the greater or more expanded that we are, the more expanded that we are. Our vision becomes broader, our understanding greater, our wisdom grows, we can act to better purpose. All those kind of nebulous things that are still really wonderful to have. So, like I said, okay, I'm going to leave it at that. Let you think about your own personal past connections, what past connections you may feel within that country setting, whether things like Remembrance Day touch you emotionally and connect you back, and what you might feel in regards to your own ancestors. Do feel free to comment and send me email or put comments on the Facebook site. It's all good. I'd love to hear from you. I did promise you a song, and the song is I had it all queued up and everything for me to read. It's from Tiller's Folly. They have done a song about a World War I hero, and I'll give you the background on that in a sec. So Tiller's Folly is a local to Vancouver, Vancouver, BC band. They've got a very strong Celtic influence, and they, like I said, they did this song in honor of this hero, and they have written up a bit about it, so I'm going to read that to you. The interesting part here is we don't connect with the generic things of like World War I veterans, unless to just say that to most people, you won't get much of an emotional reaction unless they say have met somebody. If you've met someone, you now have a personal direct connection and you feel it differently. So part of why I'm playing this song is to make that point and to potentially have that connection a little stronger of this is one example of one individual person who was in that battle or that war. And in the epochs of our lives or our country's lives are often described in group manners but are made up of individuals. And if you can connect with the individuals, then your understanding and connection with the whole is so much stronger. So, with no further ado, here is his story of Robert McBeath. So, on November 20th, 1917, World War I was raging in Europe. Entrenched in bitter warfare at the Battle of Cambrai in France, a regiment of Seaforth Highlanders was pinned down by intense machine gun fire. Lance Corporal Robert McBeath from the small Sutherland village of Kinlochbervie, Scotland, and I'm very sorry that I mispronounced that, but, well, wow. He volunteered to attack the guns alone, armed only with a Lewis gun and revolver. Joined by a tank, McBeath attacked 5 machine gun nests in succession, capturing 3 officers and 30 enemy soldiers. For this heroic action, Robert McBeath was awarded the Victoria Cross. McBeath returned home to a hero's welcome. He married Barbara McKay and soon after emigrated to Vancouver, Canada, where he joined the Vancouver Police Department. On October 9, 1922, Constable Robert McBeath was fatally shot while engaging in an arrest. McBeath's funeral was one of the largest ever in Vancouver history. All stores and banks were closed and thousands attended to pay their respect. The procession took 20 minutes to pass and was led by Vancouver Police Inspector George Hood on horseback. He was followed by the Vancouver Police Pipe Band, the Widow Barbara, the mayor and council members, 300 Masons, 80 Vancouver Police, 100 Vancouver Firefighters, 12 Royal Canadian Mounted Police, 50 Seaforth Highlanders, a contingent of Irish Fusiliers, several hundred World War I veterans, 40 members of BC Electric Railway, 12 of the Canadian Pacific Police, several hundred members of the Foresters, St. Andrews, and Caledonia Societies. As an interesting thing, do you think that you would see another funeral like that these days? Do we have people that we're willing to do that for that are viewed in that kind of way? That's just an interesting thought, isn't it? What it is that led up to this person being so honored upon his death, what he must have represented to so many people, and is there anyone that we would feel like that now? And is there anyone that you would go to that you don't know personally, but you would join in that type of experience? It's curious. So the lead singer for Tiller's Folly, Bruce Coughlin, was commissioned by his hometown, McBee's hometown, Kinlochbervie, Scotland, to commemorate Robert McBeath in song. And things kind of grew from there, and the Vancouver Police Pipe Band got involved, and I believe that's in the recording that you're going to hear today. So this is their song, so Tiller's Folly's song for Robert McBeath, and I hope you enjoy.
To walk down the strand at Halshamore as the ships set out on the waves is to think of the bravest of Sutherland men, all those who rest in their graves. For there's many a lot that's been washed on these shores, many that's tamed to the depths, many's a lot that's been lost to the wars, and never young Robbie Macbeth. Where have you been, Robbie Macbeth? Where are you, Mario? Was the cause of all Sutherland's pride, Wapuchi Mario? Well, he signed himself up, though he's only a lad, and he's gone with the sea force to France. He's taken the run with a big Lewis gun, and he's taught the Germans to dance. Now down to the palace, he's Kente the Queen. Broadly, it's Kente us all. Once he has given himself to a task, there's none that can steer him awry. And where have you been, Robbie Macbeth? Where are you, Mario? Was the cause of all Sutherland's pride, Wapuchi Mario? Are half-masted in Vancouver City. A somber procession begins to honor their constable Robert McBeath. They gathered a tribute to him. As you walk down the Strand, Halshamore, as the sun sinks into the west, think on the bravest of Sutherland men, the gallant young Robbie Macbeth. And where have you been, Robbie Macbeth? Where are you, Mario?
Was Robbie McBeath by Tiller's Folly. You can find their music at www.tillersfolly.com, and I will have it in the show notes. And now I'm going to do that very classic poem, which probably almost all of you have heard of. It's called In Flanders Fields, and if you haven't heard from it, or sorry, heard about it, it's a poem that was written by Canadian physician and Lieutenant Colonel John McRae. It's popularly believed that he wrote it on May 3rd, 1915, after he witnessed the death of his friend, Lieutenant Alexis Helmer, who was 22 years old, on the day before. So he died the day before that this was written. And it became very popular in regards to Remembrance Day. It's kind of the poem associated with it. So I'm going to read it and then give a minute of silence, wherein I invite you to think about your own past connections, personal, ancestral, country. And if you're in Canada, this is another chance to have that minute of silence for those who have died in our service and to protect us. Well, and also those who served in that capacity. Don't want to forget them. Just because you served and you didn't die doesn't mean you don't deserve some respect and honor and silence and contemplation. So I invite you to take the minute to think about your own past connections and connect yourself with history, and personal history as well as collective history. With no further ado, In Flanders Fields. In Flanders Fields, the poppies blow between the crosses row on row that mark our place, and in the sky the larks still bravely singing fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago, we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you from failing hands we throw the torch. Be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with those who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders fields. And now it's time for the ritual part. So as I said earlier, I'm doing this, to try and release the lingering negativity around a past relationship, friendship that has ended. Normally I don't edit at all for these, but in this case, if I happen to say something that identifies the person, I think it's safe to say it's a he. I've certainly known enough he's over the years. But I will remove anything that identifies the person, given that, well, I don't have their permission. So I do have to clean that up. There's nothing particularly, no tools much that I'm using in this particular ritual, because it's just, I'm kind of beyond symbols at this point. If you heard a weird catch in there, that's because one should not put things onto the laptop when, when you're trying to do things like record on it. So, as I was saying, there are no candles, there's no incense, there's the only things that I have brought with me to do this ritual is a pitcher that has him in it and a singing bowl for reasons I don't fully understand. As I've said, I don't typically plan these things out. But this isn't a strong magical working with the intention of working outwards. This is an inward working where there's nothing external being brought in. So I'm not concerned about having to protect me from me. In this case, like if you're working on a personal ritual and where you want to change something inside of yourself, but you're working with things that come from outside of yourself, such as you were using, magical tools, invocations of deities or nature spirits or what have you, but outside things, things that don't exist within your flesh, to help you in that working, then you would want to consider still creating a sacred, safe space in order to do the ritual, because you wanted to be sure that whatever you're bringing into yourself is good, healthy, wholesome, and going to help you. Because I'm only working purely internally, and there may be a little help from my deities, but they're my deities, I serve them, there's a bond and a connection, I don't have to worry in the same way. So I'm not. I am just going to do, without further ado, actually, as the case may be. So I believe I already said, but the glitch kind of messed me up, that I will remove anything that identifies the person. And first we have to get into the right headspace. So here I'm setting up my own meditative state, using the singing bowl, a few deep breaths, and relaxing. I've also started calling up to mind memories of the person that I knew. So I'm pulling that experience closer to me so it's ready to work with. The feelings are present and available for ritual action. I remember. I remember you. I remember you as the brother of my heart, as the breaker of my heart, as someone who's counseled me that I have counseled, someone who's spent many nights in my home, sharing, talking, laughing, even occasionally crying, drinking, absolutely. I remember you. I remember the pain at the end, the lack of understanding that we shared, and that haunts me. So here I've defined who we were to each other and where the current things from my perspective stand. I think of meeting you on the street, and what I feel is all of the angst that we ended on. I think of you in my thoughts, and I remember the crying and the frustration and the anger, both of us, both ways. I do not want to live life remembering only that.
Now this is the statement of purpose for the ritual itself.
I don't want to remember and always have those be the memories that insist on lingering.
Here I started working on pulling up
the better memories and feeling the good emotions associated with them, essentially releasing the negative and embracing the good. There were so many good times. There was catching fish live with my bare hands. Sunset on the beach. Drinking in taverns. I'm here, I'm working on recalling the memories, both good and painful, before things went to shit. When we started to grow apart, and neither one of us wanted to let go. I remember you. I remember. But do I remember meeting you? I don't know. But I remember walking and talking on swings and on benches, making chili in a cauldron, which was something of a dismal failure, but it was very cool to try.
What may not be obvious is the emotional impact the memories are having on me at this point, and that's the important part, was bringing up the emotional reaction in relation to the memories.
Of all that we shared. Not all of it was bad. We plotted. We worked in such deep and terrifying places. You were there when my own nightmare started. Through it, through most of it. I often think of what could have gone different. What more could have been done. How we could have found a better way through. But I know of no such way. And I need to forgive myself for failing you. I need to forgive myself for failing us. I need to let go of what was. When things ended, it was so abrupt, and I took the magical steps that were necessary to close off. To close off our connections. But I don't know that I ever said goodbye. So here I say it now. Goodbye, my old friend. Farewell in your life. I hope you find the joy in it. I hope that you are released as well from the pain that has held us. But that is your travel, not mine. So I will now release the pain I hold inside. I forgive you. I forgive myself. And I remember the good times.
And that concludes that particular ritual. You'll notice, and I put the commentary through it as well, that what I was really trying to work on was bringing up my emotions around the memories, bringing up the memories at the same time. And to work with them in a calm and meditative state. So while I'm feeling the emotions, I'm not overwhelmed by them. And then working with the happy memories and bringing that back as a positive association. And as I was talking through it, and this is the interesting part, it can be done verbally as well as written. When you let yourself just go and you keep talking and you keep saying things, you can discover deeper things about how you feel or think about a particular subject. I wasn't thinking that I was seeking forgiveness for myself on what I had done within the relationship, whether or not it arguably, I'm not even going to get into fault. There is no fault. But there are things that you always think, well, if I'd done this, or I'd done that, or I could have done better. And I definitely feel that in this circumstance. So as I was speaking, I realized that I needed to let that go. I know there was a lot of empty space. The singing bowl didn't come through as clearly as I'd hoped to kind of give it background noise. So apparently that was the purpose. But it was also grounding and soothing me and keeping things moving and flowing. If you don't have one, I kind of highly recommend them. Because in that meditative quality where you just got the repetitive motion, the quiet sound, and you just keep moving with it, it's really quite cool. But I digress. Anyhow, so that was a very short and very simple, but I don't know if you could hear it in my voice at the time, but I can certainly tell that it was had impact on me. I was certainly feeling it as I was going through it, and I do feel a little lighter now. So there you go. There is the Abysmal Witch ritual for probably the month at least. If you have any questions, concerns, comments, thoughts, insights, or anything at all that you wish to share, feel free to email me at penniesinthewell@gmail.com. And don't forget, there's that outstanding contest for a little special something from one of the Zombie Palooza sponsors. There's going to be another contest coming up very shortly in the next regular episode, but first I have to record it. So wish me luck. I hope to share again and be with you again in November, but if not, forgive me, for it is crazy. Take care, and deep and wild blessings upon you.